Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Monday, late afternoon. A little while I'll be mincha, actually, in an hour. Anyhow, I want to do the Haftarah today because I can before. This week I have to do midterms and stuff in college. So let me take a look at the Haftarah. And which is, I don't think we say it every year. Usually, I think it's Shabbat Zohar or Machor Sachodesh, something like that. And this is being sponsored by the Luxembourgs, Shmuel Nachum Luxembourg, with Shmuel's grandfather, Shaul HaKohen Ben Yaakov Nissen, whose yahrzeit is coming up in a couple of weeks. And I asked him to describe him. He said, a man of tremendous integrity who had a love of all Yidden and Eretz Yisrael. All Yidden? I don't know. That takes a lot of love. But for his family, more than anything else, that makes more sense. Extremely wise person who never offered unsolicited advice, but offered unending support to his families and their travels through life. Despite an eye injury in an eye during Navy training in World War II, that's interesting, and a stroke in the other eye later, he made sure to read multiple newspapers so he could keep up on Israel in order to educate with no holds barred those who attacked Eretz Yisrael. Well, it's a shame he's not here now, because we need a bunch of those. These idiots in Hollywood and everywhere are attacking Israel. It's, you know, we need all hands on deck if they're intelligent. And also, this is being sponsored as a chus for the continued recovery for his wife. In other words, their grandmother, Italea Bas Yochevi Bruch, who's 90, and recovering health setbacks, and she should see nachas and good health from her children, grandchildren, and great-great-grandson. Wow, very nice. Okay, so second in notion. Thank you. Now, the Haftarah today is, chapters 8, basically, of the Book of Kings. And that's the boring stuff that usually people don't read, because it's all about the construction of Beis HaMikdash, so more specifically, the setting up and the actual dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, including the party, the ceremonies, and all the rest of it. The previous chapter is chapter 7. Now remember, and I say it endlessly, the chapter headings are not Jewish, they're from the Christians. So our Haftarah doesn't acknowledge that the first Pasuk is actually Perek Zayin, Pasuk Nun Aleph. You know what I mean? They really regard it together with the next chapter. So it says, V'atishlam kol melacha asher asa Shlomo. They finished all the work that Shlomo had set up. I talked about the Michelangelo factor and all the fancy schmancy stuff and the huge construction project that the Beis HaMikdash was involved. And now comes, okay, you have a big empty building, right? Which took a long time. You have a big empty building. Now you have to stock the building called the Beis HaMikdash, Beis Rishon. What do you do? What do you do? So the first thing he says is they had like a storage room. I'm going to call it a warehouse, even though that's not the right word to use. But it was a warehouse, a sacred warehouse. I mean, the most sacred warehouse in the world. This is it, in the complex called the Temple, the Beis HaMikdash. So again, those of you who are in construction business and that sort of thing, or buy a house, you know what I'm talking about. You build a house, but then comes the time to put the stuff in it. So what did he do? This is Shlomo's shtick, you understand? How should I put it? David HaMelech, his father, had set aside a ton of money and stuff like that for building Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo puts it in the warehouse. Right? Vayavi Shlomo's kachi David Aviv, as a kesev, as a zavis, a kelim, nasan ba'otzes Beis Hashem. Otzes Beis Hashem is what you would call the sacred warehouse. It was located on the top of the Devir. It doesn't matter. But the point is like this. One is going to be, how should I put it? One is going to be put aside, for, well, it's not going to be showed to the public. I guess if you're a VIP, you come to Beis HaMikdash, maybe they showed you this is the stuff from from David HaMelech. And as we shall see in a second, it's the stuff from Moshe Rabbeinu. So that was quite a room, right? It must have been a big room. Quite a room. In certain respects, let me put it this way, from the point of view of a historian, or an archaeologist, that was the most interesting room in the temple because that you had the most ancient things from King David and even from Moshe Rabbeinu. Think about that. So it said, "Vayavi Shlomim, this Kachi David Avis, a Kesa Bazav, a Kim, Nosin Beis Hashem." I think I told you, Rashi, there's a very famous Rashi where, let's put it this way, Shlomo was kind of dissing his own father because, now it's hard to believe, but it's an interesting vort. I mean, it's hard to believe that Shlomo, of all people, would say it. But he's dissing his father because David squirreled away every penny he could get for the grand project of building Beis HaMikdash. He was obsessed on it. And when I say he was obsessed on it, there was a famine more than once in the reign of King David. He should have given all the money away that he sent for the Beis HaMikdash for the poor people that they should eat during the famine. You understand? In other words, what's the big shtick? To buy a fancy Sefer Torah? Or if somebody's hungry and starving and they need this, you know, to give them the money? Which would God like more? Let's put it that way. And I think you know the stories in Eastern Europe, the Chafetz Chaim and all these other guys used to, you know, sell or pawn Sefer Torahs or the silver crowns and things like that and Sefer Torah's money to get kids out of the Russian army. Notice, what does Hashem want? A fancy schmancy, a rimonim for the Torah? Or does he want a Jewish life? You see? It's not me, as Rashi says it. Yeshomrim, Kacham or Shlomo, Rav Hoybi Meyaba Shalashanim, Shanach Hashanah. My father, during his reign, had a 3-year famine, and people died from hunger. And all this money that, you know, he squirreled away for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I understand. David didn't take a penny of it. Okay? So when he conquered a country, or he made a good stock, investment, or acquired land and things like that, whatever he did, whenever he gathered money, he put it away in special bank account. He didn't touch it. Okay? He didn't live the life of Riley off of that. But, on the other hand, he should have gone and just given away to the poor. Because that's what Hashem wants more than anything else. The B'nai Yisrael rather than the Bayis Yisrael. That's just a famous Muslim word. I think I said that once in a previous year. I don't remember. Anyhow, so they had this room called Otsus Beis Hashem. Now, I know when you read this, you don't pay attention to it. First of all, nobody pays attention to Haftarah anyway. Second of all, if they listen to Haftarah, they're sure going to sleep in the boring ones like, you know, this one where you talk about the Beis HaMikdash stuff. But it's not really boring. It's got a lot of very interesting things. But I cannot expect that most people are going to open up Mikras Gedolos and that sort of thing and read the Pesukim closely, even the new easy art scroll ones. So that's what I'm trying to help a little bit with. And it says he got everybody together and he made a big ceremony to dedication Beis HaMikdash. Now, wait a second. That's not the only thing he put into that big room, right? That warehouse, as I call it, storage room, whatever the right word is, right? Otsus Beis Hashem. What else did he put there? So if you go to Pasuk Dalet, it says, "Vayalu Osaron Hashem b'Sol Moibes Kol Kli HaKodesh Asher Ba'ol Vayalu Osaron HaKohanim B'Alavim." So they carried in ceremoniously into the new building, into the new complex, Aron Hashem, Ohel Moed, and the Kli HaKodesh. So it sounds like, you know, he brought him into the Beis HaMikdash and set him up there, but that's not true. They did not set up the Aron. No, they didn't put the Mishkan and locate it physically within the precincts of the temple. So that you walk in, you see the permanent structure, and you all see the Mishkan structure. But rather, as Rashi says over here, it's from Tosefta, Ohel Moed she'asa Moshe, u'gnozo Shlomo mishenim debayis rishon. Okay? The Shlomo stashed it away in that room, in the Otsus Beis Hashem. And the other Mefarshim talk about that also. Who am I looking at? The So this David says, the Ohel Moed had been in Givon, as I told you this morning. And they deposited in the warehouse room. Now, it's a very sacred warehouse room. It's not a place you put in junk. But and it was Mimal Lehechel Advir. Architecturally, it's very interesting. It was above, there was a room, apparently above the Kodesh Kodoshim, the Dvir, what they call it. There's a room above it. What should be, today we say, that's not right. You're not supposed to have a sacred Torah in your house and daven in the basement if you're walking above it. So here you have the Mishkan itself, you're talking about the base of Mikdash, the Kodesh Kodoshim of all things. What do you have above it? It's interesting. You know what you had above it? You had the Ohel Moed. You see? That's different. That was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a different story. Okay? That's okay. So, the first thing they're doing is bringing in the old furniture, as we would say, but not throwing it away or selling it, but putting it in a room. I would be tempted to call it a museum room, but it's not for the public to watch. People don't get to go into the building containing the Ohel Moed. The building came in Kodesh HaKadoshim. But Kohanim did. Right? So it must have been freaky. You live in Beis HaMikdash for hundreds of years. And if you're a Kohen, especially if you're on the permanent staff, as opposed to the weekly staff. So, you get to see pretty much all the nooks and crannies. Maybe you don't go into Kodesh HaKadoshim, but everything else at one time of the year or the other. And above it is this room. You see, what's inside of it? This stuff was made by Bezalel, baby. By Moshe. This was, the crossim, the crossob, and all that kind of business. It's in there. That's what the Mepharshim say, right? Not me. And it's just interesting the way they set it up. Now, what happens next? They threw a big party, meaning Hamelch Shlomo Das Yisrael, Olav Ito Lefnei Ha'aron, as they brought in the Aron, Mizachin Son of Bokar Shilisimah, they made a holocaust of Karbonis. So as they, it's like a movie, except this would never be a Hollywood movie today. Why? You'd be showing the death of animals. That's not politically correct. That was a holocaust over here. Lo Yisafron Limirab, there's so many you couldn't count how many animals they shechted. As they accompanied the Aram into what's going to eventually be Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's strange to us. Let's put it this way. There are countries where they do this, by the way. There are. And probably once upon a time, all kidding aside, it was a Jewish custom. Today it would seem weird to us in America. As the Chosin and the Kala walk down, people are shechting animals. And of course, he's then using the meat for food and things of that nature. And that's how you show simcha. We're so antiseptic in America, we didn't even know what a shechita looks like. And maybe it's better not to know. We get our stuff wrapped already in foil and all the rest of it. And it's all antiseptic. You wouldn't even know there's an animal involved when you buy the meat in the store. So, the housewives are saying, should they get this cut or that cut? I don't know. It's not like living in a farm where you actually see an animal get killed and then you eat them. But that's what they were doing over there, okay? And zillions of them. And now, the thing goes like this. They bring the ark, with the box containing the Ten Commandments. They walk it into the Kodesh Kodashim room. This is not yet the time where it says only the Kohen can go to once a year. This is a dedication ceremony. You got to do it, right? It's not going to go by magic. So regular Kohanim have to walk in the Kodesh HaKodashim for its inauguration and deposit the Aron there. When they leave and all that, so for now on, it's only for the Kohen Gadol once a year and Yom Kippur, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But not the first time that they did it. That's obvious. Now, where do they march the box, the Aron, into? The Kodesh HaKadoshim, El Tachas Kanfa Krubim, underneath the Krubim. Wait a minute, what do you mean it's underneath the Krubim? As you know, when you read Vayakha Pekudei, the Kruvim were situated on top of the box, on top of the urn. Hashem spoke through, you know, Mibena Kruvim. They were, so to speak, part of the furniture of the urn. That's not what we're talking about over here. I don't know why, neither of them before Hashem, as far as I know. Shlomo HaMelech seems on his own, or through Ruach HaKodesh, however you understand it, that he made extra Kruvim. The ones that you got in the Mishkan are relatively on the smaller size, not that they're small. The ones that Shlomo constructed, two Kruvim, are huge. If you look at the different dimensions, they're 10 Amos or more above the Aron, or even from the ground. That could be, like, depending how you calculate, that could be 15, 20 feet. That's tall where I come from. So you're not talking about like a little tchotchke over here. You're talking about Kruvim. It's a biggie. You know, you stand next to it, towers above you. And these two images, and they're on the they're facing each other, the wings are spread toward each other, and the Kohanim deposit the arm underneath those Kruvim, which I assume means together with the original Kruvim. So if I walked in through them, I see four Kruvim, the two from Moshe Rabbeinu's time, and then the two stand alone, standing on their own feet, not on the box, but on the two sides of the box of the urn. The Shlomo made, also with wood, Atzei Shemen, and covered it with gold. It's weird, right? Moreover, if you read the Pesukim in Perek Vav and Zion, how they constructed the actual stuff. I used to teach this stuff in high school, but it was boring for kids unless you do it in a certain way. There were paintings and carvings of Kruvim all over the Beis HaMikdash. Look it up, check it out yourself. There were images of Kruvim carved in the wall, painted on the wall, on the curtains, and all this kind of stuff. So it's like a certain obsession with the Kruvim, which is very strange to us, because B'chol we don't understand what the Kruvim are. Now, you and I usually go with the interpretation, because all things are already evolved, that the Kruvim look like children, correct? But, and that's no question, that's one opinion. I remember Josephus says, we don't have them today, and he lived in time of Second Temple. We don't have them today, and, you know, we can't imagine what they were images of. Meaning, he says they're like, I forget how he says it in Greek, like they're images that have no images or something like that. Because I think this is me, myself, and I talking. In the Bayashani period, when Josephus was there, they were so opposed, radically opposed, to any images, the opposite of Bayis Rishon, when people in Tavodah Zarah all the time, Bayashani, the Jews were extremely opposed to any pictures, or, you know, like in the Torah card today, or any images even painted on the wall. There's a famous story that it's Philo talks about it, and also Josephus. Philo was embassy to Gaius, as I remember, when Pontius Pilate was the governor of Jerusalem, the Roman governor of Jerusalem. He's the famous guy in the New Testament with Yashka. So he wanted, on his own authority, to put up in Jerusalem two shields that had paintings on it. We would say today drawings of the pictures of the emperor's two sons, of Tiberius' two sons. And the Jews freaked out. You can look up. And they came in a giant assembly, and he said, this is a rebellion. So we're not rebelling. They laid down on the ground. They opened their collars and say, shech this if you want, but we can't tolerate any kind of an image in the area of Yerushalayim, certainly a Beis HaMikdash, even though it wasn't an idol at all. So, you know, Josephus is from that Kufa. But let's say you go with the Chazals, the two statues that look like children or something like that, Keruvia. Anyhow, now you have four of them. You have the two in the box of the arm, and then you have on the side, standing one side, standing the other side, these biggies, plus the other Kruvim, and pictures of Kruvim the Shlomo had all over the place. And even by Yesheni, some machlokes in the Gemara Yuma, was there Kruvim and by Yesheni, Rabbi Yavo, I think Rabbi Ocha Bar Yankov or somebody like that, says they weren't statues, but they were like pictures of them, tzurisah. Like you see today, like I said before, lions on the prochus in front of the Aron Kodesh or something like that. Yeah, Kruvim. So there's this Jewish thing with Kruvim, which is totally weird. And because the Beis Hamikdash should be the exact place where you don't have any images of anything whatsoever. Moreover, if you go by Chazal, this is totally strange, because the Torah says, exactly, do not do this. Exactly. I'm looking at the Mechilta here, right after the Ten Commandments, where right after the Ten Commandments, God says, Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zahav, Lo Sasu Lachem. So what does it mean, Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zahav? Gods of gold and silver. Loma Neamar. I'm reading a Mechilta now. It's not me. Loma Neamar. Vishalom Rav Asisa Shnayim Kruvim Zahav. Because it's going to say in the Mishkan, you have two Kruvim. Omar Harini Osa Arba. Maybe I can make more than two. Maybe I can make four. No. Don't do anything except the two that God told you. Talmud Lomar Elohei Zahav Im Hosafta Al Shnayim Harim Ke Elohei Zahav. So it's just interesting. This would be according to the Pshat that the Mishkan idea preceded the golden calf and has intrinsic, you know, holy ideas in it. And there will be a temptation to add to the number of Kruvim. You know, Hungarian style, Yemenite style, don't wear one ring, wear 10 rings, wear 20 rings if you got them. Don't have two Kruvim to have the place chock full of Kruvim. Wrong. Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zosasulchem. Don't make Elohei Chesed. Only the two that I told you. And that's hard enough. Okay? And it goes on to say, Lo Tasulchem. This is just interesting. Shlotomar. Hoel Venos Natura Shusla says the base of Migdash. Since there were Kruvim in the base of Migdash, Harinus about to Kinesis Bad Midrashas. Why can't I make Kruvim? Me, now, in my shoal, in your shoal. Why can't we make two Kruvim? Not more than two. They didn't base a Migdash. Talmud Lomer lo tasu lochem. Get it? Notice, tasu li, for me, Hashem, for the base of Migdash, for the Mishkan, rather. But not lochem. Here's another good one. Lo tasu lochem el hei chesav, shalotom hari anu osim, lanu kiderch shacher mosim bemdinos. Talmud Lomer lo tasu lochem. Which means, it may be the other religions have statues of various sorts in their churches and houses of worship, even though they're not gods, which is, of course, exactly the situation today with so many of the Christian groups. They're not gods. They aren't. But nevertheless, you got a statue of a king or of a saint or something like that. So why can't I do a Jewish one? I repeat, I'm not worshiping it. It's not a nevad. So what's wrong with it? No, lo sasu lochem. But meanwhile, you see, don't do more than what you were allowed in the Mishkan. It's hard enough to deal with the Mishkan stuff. Why should the box of the Aron with the Ten Commandments from an invisible God have two cherubs on it? That's already enough of a problem. But to go to add to it, don't do that. And that's exactly, at least it seems to us when you read it, that's precisely what Shlomo HaMelech did. Why did he do that? Right? What happened to the Elohei Chesed? The Elohei Zahav part. And there are a lot of things in there that don't make sense. And the Mepharshim know it. And the only firm approach you can, you know, give on this sort of thing, if you look in the, one minute, there's a doc here. Right now, our half tower today. And he says, there's a doc here. This is in Perches, in Melachim al Perches, what do you call it? Pasuk Vav. And it says, they brought the Aron and placed it underneath the wings of the cherubs of the Kruvim. HaKruvim hichnis tchila, the Shlomo set up these giant Kruvim first in the Kodesh Kodashim room before the ceremony, before the inauguration. VaKruvim mo'ela shasa Shlomo hayom da raglayim pein labois. They were standing under raglayim, you know, those they were statues. Right? And Ben Kruvim is no Tachas Knafim. And he deposited the Aron on the ground below where the two wings of the two Kerubim on either sides come together, like a canopy of Kerubim wings. Now the real Kerubim that Bezalel made in the Mishkan in Parshas Vayalcha Pekudei were on the Aron. They covered the Aron. I will elu Kerubim, but the Kerubim that Shlomo HaMelech made were different. They were much bigger. Each one was 10 amas, which could be as big as 20 feet or something, approximately that. That's a lot. Okay? And don't worry about the Gufa Krumim. I won't go into that. The Radak now says, the Ein Lono Lishol, we shouldn't ask, Loma Osa Shlomo Krumim Acherim, where did Shlomo get this idea that these two freestanding tall Kerubim, where did he get that from? Why didn't he just make a copy like you had in the, in the Mishkan? We can't ask that question. We can ask the same question. How come Shlomo picked and chose certain things from the Mishkan he got rid of or put away in that storage room and certain things he actually used? How do you know which item to use and which not? If you look at the Tosefta, it's in the Gemara also, in Sota, where you talk about all these sorts of things. So the Tosefta, let me find it here, says, when they built the Bayis Rishon, they put away in that room the Almoid and the crossim, krosha, bricha, amuda, badan of all the wooden and bolt parts and things like that. But on the other hand, they didn't put everything away. Alpha became lohay mishtam shal b'sholchon shasa Moshe u'menorah shasa Moshe. Isn't that interesting? Two items, and actually three, they kept from the Mishkan and they put it into the new building called the Beis HaMikdash. One is the Aron, as we know. One is the Shulchan with the bread on it, with the showbread on it. And one was the menorah. That's interesting. Shlomo HaMelech had these Michelangelo types. He could build a fancy shemantier menorah. Instead, he used the menorah Moshe Rabbeinu. So, why'd he do that? Okay? So he says, the Radak, Ein lo nalish shalomo shlosu kru macher v'lo kadas mishonim. How come Shlomo didn't make another Aron, but he used the original one? But on the other hand, he didn't make other altars, and he didn't make other menoros and shulchanos. You have to trust and believe that the dimensions and the things to use and not things to use were by Nevuah and noticed by Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, I mean, that's an unanswerable proposition. If that's the case, that's the case. But realize that the first temple was very different in many ways in terms of its actual furniture from the Mishkan. And not simply because it was bigger, but in a weird way, some items from the Mishkan they used and retained so that when you went, when you visited the Beis HaMikdash, I guess you didn't see the menorah too often. That's always the problem with Hanukkah time. How could the public see it? But some people can see it. And once in a while they took the menorah out, they say, you saw a really ancient item going back to Moshe and Bezalel. The other things went back to Shlomo. They were brand new, so to speak. And if we ask ourselves the question, on what basis was it decided to retain certain old items in permanent use and others not? I'm not sure what the answer you give. Because I don't know of a key to explain that something that was used by Moshe Rabbeinu in such and such a situation was retained. Something that wasn't was not retained. But that is with the menorah as opposed to the cutlery and things like that. I don't know. You don't know. And I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there are some. I'm serious now. I'm sure there's some of Farshim that will go into this in nth detail. I didn't take the trouble to go look in the Ramah, what's it called, the Torah Seola. He likes to go into all that kind of stuff. It's really for a Baroque appetite, Baroque attitude, where you want all these little pizzicato details. But on the other hand, they are very important. We're not dealing with the zoo. We're dealing with the Beis HaMikdash and its relationship to the Mishkan. So you see, from the Michal to everything else, there was a danger of it, you know, lapsing into some kind of Elohei Zahav. Shlomo, of all people, who was Mr. Zahav, you know, managed to prevent that in terms of the architecture. What took him down was his extravagance in other areas and with women. Not in the way he constructed the Beis HaMikdash, not as far as we're told. That's, you know, kind of a Musar Haskel over there. But the idea with which we leave Daf Torah is this idea that he started with, which is, if you have a lot of money, and it's for a Kodesh purpose, and somebody is down and out and hungry and starving, you know, what do you do with them? Do you say tough luck for the greater glory of the Beis HaMikdash? Me, myself, and I was once in the Vatican long ago, not that long ago, and went through the Vatican, not the church part, but the library part, and the museum, actually, which is endless. And you can't imagine, I mean, it just bowled me over, how many super valuable artifacts and statues and this and that and the other they have in there from Greece and Rome and this, Egypt and one country after another. And, you know, because the Vatican's been collecting for centuries. And you see that they have a wealth of art. It's got to be worth trillions. I'm serious now. I'm not being funny. And I remember when I went there that year, I read some article in the New York Times somewhere else. A bunch of Catholic schools had to close down because they didn't have enough tuition. I said to myself, if they just took one half of a wing from that Alexander the Great statue they took from whatever island it was, the face was, they could pay off enough money to give all the Catholic tuition. Same way we say, if one of these richy riches, I mean the big givers, not the rich guys, the richy rich, would take out, you know, this, look, a lady just gave $1 billion to Albert Einstein, you know what I'm talking about, right? Which is great, more power to him. Why can't someone else say, I'm going to give $1 billion for chinuch? And that way nobody has to pay. That'd be a revolution Shane Camo, sociologically, in the from communities, in Baltimore, in New York, in Lakewood, in Muncie, in Cleveland, and St. Louis, and Chicago, so on and so forth. It'd be, for, I think $1 billion would do it, and all the day schools would be free. You know, why can't it be like that? It's not going to be like that. You see? It's not the way it goes. It should be the way it goes, but it's not going to be the way it goes. Anyway, I've gone too long on this, so I just wanted to show you some of the highlights. Very interesting details. And without being funny, I've just scratched the surface. On this week's Haftorah, and there's certainly plenty of food for thought there. And with that, I wish you a good week, and I thank the Luxembourgs again for sponsoring this podcast.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.